A while back, I was watching a TV show, which a French Dharma teacher was being interviewed. And she was talking about how Buddhist wisdom, and particularly the wisdom of equanimity, is all about going with the flow, just accepting that the way nature is the way nature is going to be, and you don't try to do anything to change anything, and just accept. And the interviewer asked her, isn't that kind of defeatist? And she said, only if you think about it. And that got me to thinking. One, the Buddha was not the kind of person just to accept things. You look at his story of his life, and he fought his way to awakening for 6 years, didn't give up. And secondly, he wasn't the kind of person not to think. I mean, if he hadn't thought, we wouldn't have all the Dharma that we have. So the question is, when he taught equanimity and we practiced equanimity, what was his teaching? What did it mean for him? And tonight I'd like to focus specifically on three different ways in which he explains equanimity. It's important to notice when he talks about equanimity, he never mentions it on its own. It's not just one quality that you try to work on. It's a quality usually together with other qualities. And the other qualities give you an idea of what equanimity is all about in that context. The first set of qualities is something called the Brahma-viharas, or the sublime attitudes. These are four attitudes that you're supposed to develop without limit: unlimited goodwill, unlimited compassion, unlimited empathetic joy, and then unlimited equanimity. Now, the goodwill is a wish for true happiness, for you and for everybody else. Compassion is when you see someone suffering, you want that suffering to end. Or if you see someone creating the causes that will lead to suffering, you'd like to see them stop doing that. Empathetic joy is when you see someone who is happy or who is creating the causes for happiness, and you're happy for them. You're not jealous, you're not resentful. And then equanimity is basically realizing there are certain cases where no matter how much you want people to be happy, it's not going to happen. In which case, you have to focus your attention not on the things that you can't change, but back on the things where you can be of help. In other words, it's basically getting your priorities right, seeing, okay, these are things that cannot change, and if I waste my energy focusing on trying to make things that I can't change, change, then the energy that I would have used for making things better for in some other situation is going to be wasted. This is kind of like the equanimity of a doctor. You go to the doctor wants to cure you, but the doctor sees, one, you've got the illness, so the doctor doesn't get upset about the illness. If he's upset about the illness, he's not going to be a good doctor. And he's going to try different medicines, and if this medicine doesn't work, he'll try something else. He's not going to try to push that first medicine and keep making it trying to work. And then there are cases, of course, where the doctor realizes he can't help you. You know, the disease is beyond him. But then he has to have equanimity about that so that he can then focus on the next patient. So this is one kind of equanimity. It's not simply just accepting things. It's accepting, okay, there are some things you can't change, but there is room where you can still develop goodwill, empathetic joy, compassion. It's just learning how to read the situation so you know where your energy is best spent. So I said that this is kind of like the equanimity of a doctor or a nurse. The second kind of equanimity is the equanimity of a hunter. The hunter goes out and is looking for a rabbit, and he knows that you can't say, okay, the rabbit's going to come at 2:50 and I'll take it back and put it in the pot at 4 o'clock and then we'll have our dinner at 6. He's got to go out there and wait. He finds the places where the rabbits tend to go, and he's got to be very alert and very calm at the same time. Alert so that it's whatever slight noises the rabbit makes, or rabbits make as they come past, he'll hear them. Calm so he doesn't scare the rabbits away. Which means when, you know, then there is the sound of the rabbit, he can't say, oh, rabbit, rabbit, the rabbit's gone. So this is the kind of equanimity that you need as a meditator. And when things are coming in your meditation, you can't say, okay, concentration is going to come after 30 minutes of meditation, or my insights are going to come on this day or, you know, that day of the retreat. You have to, you know, put yourself in a situation where they are likely to happen, but then you've got to say, I'm just going to work at this, and when the results come the way I want them, I'm not going to get too excited, Because you've probably had this experience, and the mind begins to settle down. You say, wow, this is great, and it's gone. You have to say, okay, this is a rabbit, I can't scare the rabbit away. At the same time, when the rabbits don't come, you can't get upset. Because you've got it, otherwise you're not going to find the rabbits at all. So you have to have that kind of equanimity, that kind of stillness or steadiness of mind, so that whatever happens, you don't get too excited, you don't get too upset, so that you can master your skill. And this is the equanimity of a hunter. The third kind of equanimity is the equanimity of a warrior. Warriors go out into battle, and they're going to win and they're going to lose. And if they win, they can't let themselves get too excited, because the enemy may take advantage of them when they're sitting and celebrating. There was a famous story in Thai history where some Laotian troops came down into northeastern Thailand and got all the way to the town of Koh Rat, which is about halfway down into the country. And after conquering the city, they decided to have a big party. And so they got some of the local women to come in for the party. And the women got them drunk, and they carried knives with them. And it's when the Laotian troops are all asleep, drunk, then the Thai women stab them all. So you have a victory, you can't be too careless. When you have a defeat, you can't let it get you down. You have to realize sometimes there are benefits to learning lessons from your defeat so that you don't let it get you down, because you've got your idea that you have your mind set on something. This is the kind of equanimity that goes in the context of the perfections. These are qualities that the Buddha himself developed as he became on his way to Buddhahood. And one of the main perfections is determination. You've set a goal for yourself and you determine, I'm going to see this goal through. And so the equanimity that is paired with determination is the equanimity, as I said, of a warrior, where you're determined, I'm going to win in the end, even if it means if there are setbacks, I'm not going to let the setbacks get to me. If things go well, I can't let myself get careless. I've got to be careful all the time. This kind of equanimity is the equanimity that's important in daily life. As we go through life, as the Buddha said, there are eight qualities of the world. You have material gain and loss, status, loss of status, praise, criticism, pleasure, and pain. These things come in pairs. We don't like the fact that they're in pairs. We want the positive side. We want the gain and the status and the praise and the pleasure. But those things have their drawbacks. If you let yourself get carried away by them, you get careless. When material gain comes, you say, well, I can buy my way through anything. Status comes, okay, now I have the status, I can get back at my enemies. Or you just do what I want to with my status. But you've also got the problem, when you have gain and when you have status, people come to you, and you don't know why. You know, who's coming with good motives, who's not coming with good motives. It's very hard to tell them apart. So as the Forest of Johns will often say, when there's loss of status and when there's loss of loss of wealth, that's when you know who your friends are. So there's an advantage to losing things sometimes. Similarly with status, John Lee has a great comment. He says, you know, if they call you a dog, dogs have no loss. They can do what they want. If they raise your status and make you an important person, then all of a sudden you have to be very responsible, and there are places you can't go and things you can't do in order to be in line with your status. So there are advantages to not having status. There are advantages to not being popular. John Phuong, my teacher, lived in an area of Thailand where the monastery was located, and the people there did not particularly appreciate that they had a forest monastery. And as he said, it's good that people didn't like him, because when he left, he didn't have to ask permission. When he came back, he didn't have to bring presents. So if you learn to see that when there's loss, there's a good side to the loss. There's lessons you can learn that helps you maintain your determination. Okay, I'm not going to let the loss get to me. I'm going to actually learn from it and take some advantage from it. And eventually, that kind of attitude sees you through. I mean, look at the Buddha's life. He tried for 6 years different ways of meditating, different ways of practicing. They were not working. And most of us would have given up well before the 6 years. But he kept thinking there must be a way out. And so the various options that he had considered up to that point were not working. Then he tried some new options. things that he hadn't considered before, and he kept trying and testing and testing and testing, and finally realized, okay, he found the path that way. So the Buddha's equanimity, it was not the equanimity of a defeatist person, it was the kind of equanimity where you have a determination, you have a goal that you want to meet, and you make up your mind, I'm not going to let anything get in the way of attaining that goal. Now when the Buddha analyzes determination, he says it falls into four qualities. The first one is discernment, when you try to figure out what would be a good goal to pursue. And then secondly, what would be a good way to try to pursue that? What would be the most effective way? So that you set a goal for yourself that is within the realm of possibility, but at the same time is something really satisfying. And then you try to figure out what's the best way to get there. And then when you figure that out, then you have to be true to that determination. In other words, you don't give up. You just keep at it, keep at it, keep at it. If something doesn't work, okay, you have to go back and recalibrate your strategy and say, well, maybe there's another way to get there. But there's got to be some way to get there. So you have to be true to your determination. Three, you have to learn how to give up things that are going to get in the way. Many times they're things that you actually like. I have a friend who's an author. She teaches at a college and she writes novels, which means that whenever she publishes a novel, she goes around to the alumni clubs and reads a little section out of the novel. And so she has to find a little sort of self-contained story that makes sense within 10 minutes. And with her last novel, she was telling me that the novel itself was about a young woman whose mother dies. And the father at first, you know, swears that he's going to be true to the memory of the mother. He's not going to remarry. He's going to spend his time raising the children. And that lasts about 6 months. He's sent down south. This is happening in China and back in the 18th century. He gets sent down south, comes back, has a new wife, courtesan. And the girl is really upset. But the courtesan is a good woman and she tries her best to be a good mother to the girl. And so one night they're playing chess. And as they're playing chess, the new mother is saying, now, if you really want to be happy in life, you have to decide that there's one thing you want more than anything else. And you have to be willing to give up everything else for that one thing. And the young girl's kind of listening and not listening, but she's beginning to notice that her stepmother is a very sloppy chess player. She's losing this piece, losing that piece. And so the girl gets aggressive. Well, it's a trap. As more aggressive she gets, the mother wins, checkmate. And so, of course, she's illustrating her point by the way she plays chess. And she's willing to lose her pieces, and that's how she wins. And my friend said she read this to two or three alumni clubs, and after the third club, she decided she had to stop. Nobody wanted to hear the lesson. Nobody liked that little story. They all want to win at chess and keep all their pieces. And this is, you know, you're not going to get there. You have to be willing to lose some things and sacrifice things, some things, if you're going to get what you want. So that's the third quality, which is relinquishment and determination. And then the fourth is calm. In other words, keep your mind calm in the midst of all this. This is where the equanimity comes in. So it's not the kind of equanimity that says, I'm just going to accept whatever happens. There was a Zen teacher in Minnesota one time who had a student who was going to come out to Los Angeles to try his luck at the entertainment industry. And the teacher asked him, when they knock you down, what are you going to do? And he says, well, I guess I'll just have to accept it. And the teacher said, no, they knock you down, you get back up. They knock you down again, you get back up again. If you've made up your mind this is what you really want, you're not going to let anything get in the way. And when you think about it, that was the Buddha's attitude. He didn't let anything get in the way of his awakening. It took time, it took sacrifice, but he was able to do it. So these are the three kinds of equanimity three of the kinds of equanimity the Buddha taught. One was the equanimity of the doctor or the nurse who wants what is good for others, wants what is good for him or herself. But notices, realizes, okay, there are certain things you just can't do. Certain kinds of happiness that are just not going to happen. You don't waste your time on those. You learn how to accept that fact and then focus on areas where you can make a difference, where you can bring happiness. The second one is the equanimity of the hunter. I didn't go into much detail on this. In the context of the meditation, the Buddha There's one point where the Buddha gives instructions to his son on how to meditate. And he's going to teach him breath meditation. But he first starts out and he says, you've got to learn how to make your mind like earth. People throw disgusting things on the earth, but the earth doesn't react. You have to make your mind like water. People use water to wipe away dirty things, but the water doesn't react. Make your mind like air or wind. You know, the wind blows disgusting things around, but it doesn't get disgusted. And make your mind like fire. Fire can burn garbage, but it doesn't get disgusted by the garbage. So when things are going to happen, bad things will happen in your meditation, you don't react, you watch, and this is how you learn. If you are reactive, you don't learn. Because the Buddha doesn't just stop there and say, well, just don't react at all. Then he teaches breath meditation, and breath meditation is very proactive in the way the Buddha teaches it. You train yourself to breathe in certain ways so that you can induce a sense of full body awareness, a sense of ease that fills the body. Work with the mind so that if the mind is scattered, you learn how to steady it. If the mind is feeling depressed or low, you learn how to gladden it. If it's feeling burdened by something, you learn how to breathe and think in ways that will get rid of that burden. So he was teaching a very proactive kind of meditation. But the basis for that proactive meditation is this kind of solidity where you don't get upset when things are not going well. And you don't also get overly excited when things are going well. You say, I'm here to catch the rabbit and I can't scare the rabbit away. And if the rabbit doesn't come, I'm still going to stay here until it comes. And so this is the kind of attitude that will see you through in the meditation. So equanimity in this case is not just accepting things, whatever comes up in the mind. You have to remember that when the Buddha taught mindfulness, it wasn't acceptance. Mindfulness means keeping something in mind. You sit down, you have a purpose for why you're sitting. You want to remember that. You're here to get the mind calm. You're here to get the mind more clear. So remember that. And then you remember, okay, this is the object I'm going to focus on. I'm going to focus on the breath. You remember that. And then I remember which ways of breathing help the mind to settle down, which ways of breathing calm it when it's agitated, which ways of breathing energize it when it's too sluggish. Okay, these are the things you remember. So mindfulness doesn't mean acceptance. Equanimity doesn't just mean acceptance of whatever comes up. Equanimity means keeping the mind calm so that you can see things clearly and develop skill in your meditation. So that's the equanimity of a hunter who learns how not to get excited when the game is good and learns not to get depressed when the game is bad, just because otherwise you'll get scared away or you won't get any at all. And then finally there's the equanimity of a warrior who says, I've got a long-term goal and I'm going to see it through. No matter how bad the obstacles are, I'm not going to let them get me down. So we're not here to be defeatist. We're not here to just sort of accept whatever comes. We live a life where we have to have goals. As the Buddha said, this is the nature of the mind. It's constantly creating things for the purpose of something. The word in Thai is atta. Excuse me, the word in Pali is atta. And it's paired with the word dharma. There's atta and then they go together. The atta is the goal of the dharma. The reason the Buddha taught was not just to say something interesting, but he taught for a purpose, which is that people could take his teachings and use them for their true purpose, i.e. which is to put an end to suffering. But he goes on and says, this is the nature of consciousness. We create things, we fabricate our experience out of the raw material that comes from our past karma, but the present moment is a moment of constantly putting things together for the purpose of pleasure, for the purpose of well-being. And he's saying there's nothing wrong with that, it's simply that our purposes tend to be scattered. And because they're scattered, we have a little bit of this, a little bit of that, but things don't really go in a particular direction. And he's teaching us, okay, there is one goal which is really worthwhile, which is the goal of putting an end to suffering. And to whatever extent we can direct our lives in that direction and keep our actions in line with that goal, that's when we learn how to use the dharma. And so equanimity is used as one of the qualities of mind to help cure our suffering, to help gain what we want, and to see us through as you know, whatever difficulties there may be in the path. So those are my thoughts for the evening.